I know I may be young, but I've got feelings too, and I need to do what I feel like doing. So let me go and just listen. It's Britney, bitch.
Welcome. Hello, everybody. My name is Christian Overfield.
And I am Martha Guzman, and we are the hosts of the Rockstar Autobiography Podcast.
Join us every 2 weeks as we review autobiographies by the greatest and most famous musicians in history. That was Martha in full performance mode. She's very excited for this episode. And
I am.
We completely sold out this week. Our ratings dipped a little, and we just decided, you know what? We're going to do what it takes to bring them back up. We're going to give the public what they want. And what they want, Martha, you're going to have to say it. Can't see.
It's Britney Spears.
Martha, I was so
yes.
I'm a grown person. I really shouldn't care what anybody thinks of me.
Yes.
But when I was reading this book in public, I removed the dust jacket. Right. So I'm sitting there reading a book that is allegedly written by Britney Spears, and the bartender says, "I like how you took off the dust jacket."
Was it our friend?
No, it was somebody different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we read Britney Spears' book. That same bartender said everybody apparently is reading this book.
Yes.
I expect these numbers to match Dave's. How could they not?
It could very well happen, yeah. Christian. I wouldn't be surprised if it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, Martha, you know, let's just get to it. Time is short. Life is short.
Yes.
Let's jump in. I know you're excited. I'm going to therefore sort of suggest it was your pick, although I'm sure we would have both, agreed.
Yes.
So what did you think?
I liked this book. I did like it. But I want to, before I elaborate as to why I liked it, I want to preface all of this by saying that was this the best written book we've read? No. Was it written in a way that just really grabbed you and where you were totally in it, and it was, like some of the other books that we read that we have really loved and really have gotten into? No, it was none of those things. I read it very quickly.
I read it like lightning. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But I liked it. And part of the reason that I liked it is because while I wouldn't necessarily say that I am a fan of, a big fan of Britney's music, I do like her music. I do like some songs a lot. But I liked it because I felt that she finally got to get things off her chest. I liked it because I have always rooted for her. I feel that she's gone through quite a bit, and I think that this book shed light on a lot of the things that she's gone through in her life. And I think because I have always rooted for her, and I was glad that she was able to finally say the things that she hadn't been able to say, in part because of her conservatorship and all of the things that most of us know about her life. And this book could have probably been, it's a little over 200 pages. It's like 250 some pages or 270 pages or something like that. I felt that it could have been half of that. But
really?
Yeah, I did. But by the same token, I think that she just really needed this as a way to move forward in her life. I think she wrote this both for herself and for her fans. And, Christian, I work in downtown LA, so I was witness to a lot of the Free Britney movement and her supporters working in downtown LA. You know, they would often have, whenever her hearings were going to take place, they would often close the streets down because they were there in support of her. And so reading some of this, you know, and when the court cases were happening, you know, I witnessed a lot of that in terms of her fans and the movement that was behind her. And so I really felt that this, again, was written in part as a way to just get the truth out and to tell her side of the story for those people that may not have known it. But I think that most of us in one way or another knew some of it. And I think truly, I think that this was for the fans, you know, for her fans who always stood behind her and supported her. And so for those reasons, I liked it. And I liked that she let it all hang out. You know, she really just talked about everything that we have all witnessed on TV and her breakdowns and her meltdowns. And, you know, it shed light on situations that perhaps we didn't know the context for. And interestingly, I think that as I was reading this book, and I think I shared this with you at one point, I said, I'm pretty sure that she wrote this. And no, it was a ghostwriter, but I think that the ghostwriter did a good job in channeling her voice, because I felt like she wrote it. You know, it sounded like her. So I liked it. And I'm glad that Brittany has finally had the chance to speak her truth and to share it.
Mm.
Yes.
I see. Well, what I noticed right away is, because we read this right on the heels of, what's this, the guy from Echo and the Bunnymen? Will Sargent.
Yes. Right?
And that book, clearly he wrote every word. He didn't have any help. And, you know, I kind of poke fun at it. And here's the opposite. This book felt like somebody from People Magazine wrote it. It felt like reading a People Magazine article.
It did.
Which is both good and bad. I mean, it goes down like total candy. I know some people who watch all those reality shows.
Yes.
And they just, the way they talk about it is like they can't wait to sit down and just go mindless and ingest this this total vapid nothingness.
Oh my god.
And I get that appeal. Like once in a while, you just want you want a bag of sugar.
Yes.
And that's what this book was like. It was a long glorified People Magazine article. I think, you know, because you and I have, we're famous for our integrity. That's how we got into the Smithsonian and how we were we were nominated for the podcasters.
Yeah.
Obie Awards.
Yes, is yes.
Our integrity.
Yes.
I think we kind of diminished a little of it with this book, though.
Really?
Because it had nothing to do with music. It really didn't at all. It just felt like it's a shell who's really just famous at this point and was always famous for being famous. And I don't say that because I dislike Britney Spears. I feel like everybody alive has the same impression of her. This she seems kind of likable enough. She was out of her depth in this whole Hollywood scene as this kind of trailer girl. I'm just going to say it. And her life has just gone crazy. But I've never really judged too much, because who knows how you or I would behave under these circumstances. And when you heard about this crazy conservatorship,
yes,
that seems, you know, not fun. But I think most people have always been kind of pro, you know, Britney. She seemed, and I think she was sort of before Christina Aguilera, before Katy Perry, before all those people. I feel like she was, for that group of people, the lead cyclist, and she took the big hit. And the rest got to kind of draft off of her and let her make all the crazy mistakes. But yeah, I mean, it just seemed like chewing gum. That's what the book was like. I don't know. I think the ghostwriter deserves many prizes for writing this book. It reminded me a lot of Mariah Carey's and Sinead O'Connor's, actually.
Interesting.
Mostly Mariah Carey, because at the beginning it flows really well and you're learning about her childhood, which is interesting. It moves so quick. I mean, it really, that's why when you said the book could have been shorter, I was surprised, because it glosses over so many things. It just sort of gives you superficial little glimpses into the life. And she, once in a while, she'll get into some details about some of the peaks or the valleys. But overall, it just speeds along. And in the beginning, I'm like, okay, I'm reading about her story, and she seems likable. But then somewhere along the way, like with Mariah and Sinead O'Connor, I feel like suddenly I'm reading a crazy person. It felt that way to me. And I remember thinking, when did that happen? It's the same voice, but now the same person is saying things that are totally nutty. And she seemed nuts to me by the end. Honestly, the more I read it, the more I don't think that any human being really should have happened to her, what happened to her, where the family just takes control of her entire empire and runs her life. I don't think anybody, I mean, if she wanted to destroy her life, that was her prerogative to do, you know, that was her, she should have been able to make that decision. But I do feel like reading this book, you know, it did feel like, hey, here's Britney's moment to tell her truth, to finally show that she's sane and she has been sane all along, right? I didn't come to that conclusion by the end. I thought she seemed kind of nuts.
Well, she talks about her, you know, her mental state and not being well because of, I mean, she went through a lot. And I didn't quite feel that way. I saw the gradual progression to the point where things just spiraled out of control in her life. I mean, just in her recounting of her story, right? In terms of, for instance, you know, she talks about how when she was growing up, her dad was an alcoholic. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the most nurturing home life, even though it appeared to have been that way, you know, the way that it was initially. I mean, I remember when she first came on the scene as a teenager, and it appeared as though her family was a perfectly normal, quote unquote, normal family, right? And, you know, she tells us that, in fact, it was not like that, that her dad was an alcoholic. Her parents were always arguing. In fact, her parents almost got divorced shortly after they were married, and they soon had her brother shortly after they got back together. They had her brother, then she came along, and finally her sister, but they were not necessarily the best couple. She talks about how at the age of 13, she was drinking alcohol with her mother.
It's not
so it's not as though she had the most stable home life nor the most stable upbringing. And you throw in the mix the fact that she became so successful at such a young age. I mean, at 15, she'd already signed a record deal and she was, you know, on her way. And everything, you know, you see how she, and she talks about how she was never necessarily comfortable.
Yeah, it was.
Which was the most surprising part of this entire book, frankly, that she was never entirely comfortable being front and center, getting all the attention that she was getting, and how she much preferred to be at home. And again, that's always surprising to me, but it was especially surprising in this case because, again, I think that the way that she was portrayed as a teenager, and even as she became a little bit older in her 20s as a young woman, it never came across that way. But she does start talking about how she began to spiral. And so much of it, I felt, was in part after she has the breakup with Justin Timberlake, which, by the way, he does not come off well in this book at all. at all.
But not for the reasons, I don't know what reasons you're thinking.
No, I mean, he just doesn't come off well for both, you know, the reasons that I think at this point everyone has heard. If anything, that's the one part of this book that's been talked about the most, and the fact that she did get pregnant as a teenager when she was dating Justin Timberlake, and she had an abortion. But even beyond that, I mean, he just comes off... And again, it's her truth, right? And obviously, there's always two sides to every story, to every relationship. But from hearing her side of it, I mean, quite honestly, I think that, you know, she paints a picture of him not as a very likable person, quite frankly. And again, that's her side. And who knows what, you know, what he's really like.
You know, so actually, I don't begrudge him the fact that all of that happened, because again, he's dealing with that stuff too at his age. And there's no manual for how a human being I mean, it's hard enough to deal with life, and let alone at that level with all that money and all that, all those things happening. It's his persona that cheats. the way he just adopted, let's just say, a vernacular that was not natural to him. Going, "Fushies."
Yes.
Didn't you want?
Yes. So was I.
Laughing. And
the way that she,
when I read that description, do you know what? Hold on real quick. The way she seems also, supportive. I like what I liked about her. She did seem so like supportive of all the boyfriends. Whatever they wanted to do, and however ridiculous it was, she seemed supportive. If we can believe her, so she didn't make at the time. I guess other people would make fun of Justin Timberlake and mimic him to her, like, oh my god, this guy is just too much, right? But she, right. You know, she was on board, and I in that regard, she seemed like a supportive and loving person. And so
she did.
That's why he came across poorly to me. Not that he was involved.
That's exactly.
In any of this thing.
Yes. Yes. That was part of it for me too. For me, it was all of it, but that was the bulk of it, frankly, for me too, in terms of the fact that the way he came across and the way that, you know, she was always supportive of him. And she really, I mean, the way that she talks about the way that she felt about him, and the love that she felt for him. And she says, I was obsessed with him. Yeah. There was nothing I would not have done for him. And I believe it, Christian. I believe it.
I think we've all
been young, and many of us have been both in love and young at the same time. And, you know, that first love, not to diminish any other relationships that come after that first love and their significance and their importance to us. But that first love really is all consuming.
Well,
right. And
she says she's, I think, what, almost physically incapacitated for some period of time. She just doesn't leave.
She just could not.
Her bedroom cannot function. Which is,
she cannot.
That's a bit
function.
Much. That's a lot. I mean, again, like you say, we've all kind of been there, but I did leave my room. Didn't you?
Well, barely.
Oh, well, I guess men have less feelings maybe at that age.
Well, I think men find it easier sometimes.
Well, it depends on who's doing the leaving.
Well, that's just it.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, the way that she talks about it, you know, she talks about how she was just so affected by that breakup, right? And so, to me, honestly, Christian, as I read the book more and more, it was, to me anyway, it appeared that it was at that point, after that breakup, that there was a turning point, and like her, there was like a switch that went off in her, you know, and she talks about it like she was unable to trust people the same way after that breakup, and then she. And the thing that also struck me was I never knew. I mean, obviously, this was not ever reported because you were so young, but I never knew that they had lived together. And they were living they were living together. They had a home together. And I'm thinking, well, first of all, they were so young, right? And all of those things, like, they were playing house.
I
mean, that's the way that I saw it, right?
Felt
they were playing
like
house. Yeah, they were playing house. They were kids.
But they had money to be at this adult level, which is weird.
Yes, yes. So it was all very, it seemed like that just really affected her. And she talks about how she just never really, it almost felt like she never really quite.
You think that set her in the wrong? Off on the path that was, that was the first.
I think so. Okay. I do think so, Christian, because it appears that she never really got over it. And one thing that really struck me is, you know, that she talks about, you know, he was moving on, and I found out that the week we broke up, he had already slept with 6 or 7 girls. And here I was, unable to move forward. I didn't want to date anybody. She was just so heartbroken.
Yeah. Well, and she says she cheated on herself, though. So,
well, she did, but she talks about that openly too, and you know, and so, but I think that was the starting point in her downfall, for lack of a better word. And so, for me, it was easy to see the spiraling that soon came. I was able to sort of see how it started and what it led to. And so I was able to kind of put that together. And so for me, by the end, where she is, you know, she is trying to put her life back together again, and she's trying to do all these things. And so I saw that. I saw, like, okay, I get it. Like, now I understand her. I really came away, honestly, Christian, I came away feeling really sad for her. And feeling a lot of empathy for her. Like, truly, I genuinely did. And I was really, I just felt like she's such a talented person. And yet, you know, she's had to go through so much, because she talks about how, you know, again, her life was just so controlled in every way.
I thought it did not speak well for Justin. This is so funny. So she's incapacitated. She's crushed. Everybody's aware that she's been demolished by the breakup. And Justin gets wind of this, and his idea of making her feel better is to fly back to see her, which to me already is just a terrible idea.
Oh, I mean, you know,
if somebody's going to get over you, you got to leave them alone. But he flies out to see her, and his gift to her is this, he writes this letter. I get the cherry for this one. He frames it. He frames his own letter. I can't think of a bigger gesture of somebody's ego than I've decided before you've even read it, that this is going to be framed and something that you should probably hang on your wall and read from time to time. And I doubt that made her feel better, I'm guessing.
Well, what do you think? I mean,
I want to see that. That letter belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Christian, you know what's so funny? I thought of that too. I thought that letter needs to make an appearance at some point.
I hope it's written in his vernacular of, like, yo, girl, baby. You know, you're always going to be number one for me for shiz. My heart beats for two.
You're it, baby girl. Others may come and go. Others may come and go, but you will be the one. No one compares to you, baby girl. Just you. Oh my God. When I read that, Christian, I had to pause. I was like, okay, I need a moment.
I'm going to start doing that next time I break up with a girl. I'm going to frame it. I'm going to just get a copy of his letter, frame it, and give it to her. And just, like,
just
write out
the name.
Brittany's name. Yeah, just handwrite over it. There you go.
I thought if any ex-boyfriend would have done that to me, I would have broken that thing on his head. Yeah. Like, get the hell out of here with your stupid friend letter.
That would have helped you get over that person in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants, right? And so I think that it just, and she says, like, it made her feel so, of course it did. It just made her feel like, A, why did he do that? And second, like, really, you think this is going to help me get over you? I mean, it was very
great.
It was not a good move on Justin's part.
You know, what's interesting is that these child actors get started early, boy. So
yes, they do.
I knew that she was hanging around Ryan Gosling and Christina Aguilera, but I didn't know Natalie Portman was in the mix. That was interesting.
That was interesting
and
to me too.
What was really interesting is that I felt like she was a parallel version, but who made healthier life choices and clearly had a different support structure behind her, and what happens when that occurs. Because I can't think of two different trajectories than Natalie Portman's and Britney Spears.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
They're all part of the Mickey Mouse Club.
They signed their soul over to Satan in that moment. And
Blame it all on the mouse.
That's right. And they all had careers. You got to wonder. I thought that what was the turnoff to me is her. I will commiserate with her. People have told me that my picker, P-I-C-K-E-R, picker, is broken. And I really felt that this girl's picker was deeply not working, because I'd forgotten about Kevin Federline. And when I read it, when he makes his entrance into the book, it's just so seedy. You know, those people who have those rat tails that they wear?
Yes.
I don't even know if he had one, but I think of him as that kind of guy. I think of him as like a Vanilla Ice kind of person.
Right.
Yeah. And when he's, I'm like, you know, Britney Spears, despite her heartbreak at that point, is still kind of on top of the world. Could have had almost anybody she wanted. Yes. And she picks this guy.
Yes.
Who's got, you know, he's got a kid he's not visiting already. And then he's got another ex-girlfriend pregnant. And that's who she chooses. That blew my mind. To me, that was the moment where you've just set the pattern for your life that really she's replicated over and over. And that's the part. It's a sort of a mentality, I feel like, Martha. I don't know how to say it with, or rather how to not say it, but it kind of, it's a kind of whiskey tango element that permeated the thinking, especially in the guys that she was choosing and the names of the kids, and the whole thing was like a sort of Louisiana mentality that she didn't have anybody else around her to help elevate that, because it's the same mentality, but worse. She was sort of the best of them all, and they just put her in a cage and just milked her for the money. But that Kevin Federline moment was like, oh, I forgot about it, and I felt gross reading about it all over again. I don't know about you, but that's how I felt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think everyone felt that, or at least many people did, you know, when he came into the picture, right? And she talks about how, you know, I think at that point, she had been still heartbroken over Justin. And they were really getting over him. And yes, she was dating other men and meeting men. But, you know, I think in her heart of hearts, it was Justin. You know, she hadn't fallen in love with anyone. Yeah. It was still Justin that she loved and that she had a heart for. And so
talking about Justin Timberlake.
I know. And so then comes Kevin Federline.
It has nothing to do with music.
No, and then comes Kevin Federline, mm-hmm. who she says, you know, was, you know, giving her the attention that she was lacking.
Be more specific, because it really speaks to the, I think, how he got in the door is, according to Britney, he literally holds her in a hot, hot tub. How does, by the way, how does Kevin, a guy like Kevin Federline, get into an environment like that to begin with? That's already just curious to me. But yeah, he wins her over is it a pool? I thought it was a hot tub. So I feel like she really surrendered to Kevin Federline because he was helping her kind of, it felt like metaphorically, he was still consoling her over the torch she was carrying for Justin. And he was just, you got to hand it to that guy. He held her as long as it took and he didn't complain. He was there for an hour or two. You get the sense that like a contest to see who... And he wasn't letting go, boy. And, you know, so if we can, I mean, people, I think, know the story of that. What was new information to me, and I couldn't believe, and I guess this is how people just very quickly, Kevin Federline thinks that he's somebody, which is interesting. And he starts his, I love Britney Spears' one dig in the whole book is she talks about Kevin Federline's rap career.
I know exactly. I know exactly what you're going to say.
The line is so, it's so sweet and patronizing and condescending.
I love it.
Here we go. Kevin was in the studio all the time. He really thought he was a rapper now. Bless his heart. Because he really did take it so seriously. Just thought that was great.
And that's such a Southern thing. I have a friend who lived in the South for a long time, and that's the same. Bless their heart.
Just love it. So patronizing. And again, it speaks to, like, while she's with him, she's on board. Whatever her man is doing, she's not going to speak ill. She's on board. But now she's not, obviously. So I guess Kevin thinks he's the show somehow. And he starts ordering his security. This is where I see Britney's, I think she really doesn't let you in at all completely to the story. Kevin refuses to let her near the recording studio and has security block her from coming into his ongoing weed parties, which sounded so gross, Martha. So nasty. All these gross dudes in their tracksuits getting high, smoking bongs.
Well, and we've read about other men doing this too, you know, other raw. And it always sounds
gross. But it's
gross.
At least they've got some talent. I mean, she just went and found the raunchiest trailer with people just do it. Was, I didn't understand. And she's like asking to be let in, and the security that are keeping her out are security she's ultimately paying for, which is really the beginning of the whole conservatorship pattern, where her own money is being used by other people for purposes against her. And how yes. that comes to pass is spooky. It really, this is like a spooky lesson in how yes. nefarious people can be. And then right away I can't imagine what this guy was thinking by divorcing her, I guess, except he wanted them. I don't know. I don't really know. But then he starts this custody battle. And again, Martha, I've been on, you know, the other side, and I'm telling you, there's something that she is not relating, because I don't care what shenanigans the guy is pulling. It really is a system that is still fairly geared towards the woman. From the outset, it's kind of hers to lose, if you will. That isn't to say a man can't get custody of the child, but it starts out at a minimum, I think, is like a 60-40 proposition at a minimum. And so for him to so successfully block her ability to see her children, it didn't seem kosher to me. I didn't believe her. And I think there are things that she is definitely not telling, because there's no way.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, she does talk about how she was having severe postpartum depression. And we have to remember that she did have two children essentially back to back within a span of about a year. And, you know, look, Christian, this may be too TMI, but here it goes. I mean, just a regular menstrual period can send your emotional state into a spiral sometimes, right? And that's just a regular old period. I cannot imagine being in the position that she was in, being Britney Spears, having this husband who you now are kind of feeling a little bit distant from, who you feel is maybe not necessarily being as loving and as supportive as he was before.
You mean smoking weed in a trailer.
You know, you have two babies, you know, so I'm sure that she wasn't, and she tells us that she wasn't.
That sentence, the one you just spoke, I behave poorly. There's not a specific example really ever that she really doesn't get into any detail. And she doesn't get into details.
Right. She doesn't get into details. But I mean, I think we did see some of those things play out in real time, you know, and that's when, you know, we saw some of it play out. And so we know that she wasn't well, you know, we know that. And so I'm sure that that was part of the reason that he was able to take those kids and to do all that he did. But, you know, Christian, I want to go back to a little bit about why she fell so hard for Kevin Federline. I mean, well, you know,
right.
And she says something, you know, she says something that really stood out to me, not because I felt that this was true as a woman, but I felt that this is true just as people, we all want to be loved. We all want to be cared for. We all want those things. And I felt that this really stood out to me in the book. And I want to read this. And this is about, again, answering why Kevin Federline.
Why? So she says, Kevin Federline.
And she says, I feel like a lot of women, and this is definitely true of me, can be as strong as they want to be, can play this powerful role, but at the end of the day, after we've done our work and made our money and taken care of everyone else, we want someone to hold us tight and tell us everything's going to be okay. I'm sorry, I know it sounds regressive, but I think it's a human impulse. We want to feel safe and alive and sexy all at the same time. And that's what Kevin did for me. So I held on to him like there was no tomorrow. And I think that, again, you know, as a woman, I can understand that. But I think that you don't have to be a woman to understand that. You know, I think when you've been heartbroken, when you've had a hard time with everything around you, sometimes we don't necessarily make the best choices in life if someone gives us that sense of warmth and security. And I think for her, that's what it was. But unfortunately, you know, it appears that for Kevin, it was, you know, Brittany was a stepping stone into pursuing his own things that he wanted to pursue. And it was easy to do so. Yes.
I'm sure, you know, like you've done, I get curious. I went to look up Kevin Federline's musical contributions to the world right as I'm reading all this. I couldn't find anything. There was one. I was looking because I thought she named an album. I was really excited at that point. I was like, this album. Right. Oh, yeah. There's just one song called like Papa Zoa, I think it is. It's not even a song.
Oh, Papa Zoa, I think.
There you go. Yeah. And it's just, it's got this grainy photo that looks like it was taken in that trailer after Bong hit. And it's Kevin at his most Kevin self. And I put it on for 1 second. I couldn't, I just couldn't even wait that long. I couldn't hear any rapping, so I turned it off. But
goodness.
I wanted to see what the outcome of all that was. And there's nothing.
All that for nothing.
I need it to be about music somehow, somewhere. And, you know, we're just talking about a People magazine article right now.
Well, she also, let's talk a little bit about the music. And, you know, let's talk about references to some of our friends whose other books we've read. So, for instance, she tells us at the beginning when she's, you know, signed onto Jive Records and she is making her very first album. She tells us that the night before she records Baby One More Time. Who is she listening to? Do you remember, Christian, who she's listening to the night before?
She
stays up late because she wants the song to sound a little sexy.
Oh,
and so she wants her voice to sound.
She rasps up her voice. Yeah.
Yes,
I forget. Oh, wait. No, I almost had it.
You know this because we read a book, the book by one of the members of this band that she listens to the night before.
I forget. Who is it?
Soft Cell.
Oh, right. She listens to Chain of Love all night long.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that moment because it felt like cause and effect, you know?
Yes. She listens because she says she loves it. She hears a song and she absolutely loves it. And she stays up all night listening to it. And she wants, you know, the recording to sound a little sexy the next day. So she listens to that and stays up late. She also talks about meeting our dear friend, Mariah Carey.
Yes.
And this moment was just such a Mariah moment. She meets her, I think it's at one of the VMAs. And,
oh, yeah, I did like this.
And she goes in to take a photo with her. And Mariah says, oh, no, not that side. This is my good side, honey. Like, this is my side. And the thing that stood out to me about that moment is that Brittany says, you know, now we all have those, you know, the light things, right?
I love that. The halo light.
Yes. And she says, but Mariah had it before any of us did. Of course she did.
I love the idea of this woman going everywhere with this lighting system.
I love it too. I just love Mariah. I love her. But, you know, but she talks about how music was just so important to her from a very, very tender age. And she was always singing and dancing and being the little performer. And so it was something that she truly, genuinely wanted to be and to do in her life. But she does tell us that she does begin to experience social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, for a performer, that must be like death, Christian, you know, to get that level of anxiety before you have to go on stage and perform in front of thousands of people. And so I think that as she tells us her story, it's more and more evident that the fame was just too much. And I don't think she had the support system around her to really be able to navigate it in the way that she had to. And I think that was also part of the reason that the breakup with Justin was as devastating to her as it was. I know. I think that's why it was. But I do, because they were both in the same world, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was her support system. And it was more than just her boyfriend. He was everything to her. And so.
She makes a good point, I thought. Is, you know, I mean, I can be a little jaded or cynical about Sometimes I'll just be, you know, Pat Benatar's, I'll just call it, overly feminist attitude towards everything got on my nerves, and it has in the past. But she makes a good point that all of the behavior in which she indulges wouldn't have been newsworthy at all had any man done it. And I do know that because it's true. And we've read book after book after book.
They consider
what they consider that just to be the point of being a rock and roll star.
That's the reason they become rock stars, right? So that they can have all these women, so they can do all the drugs.
We've read that exhaustively. So she did make a point that everything that she was doing was sort of a PG-13 version of what Slash or any of these people have done. Yet she was committed, put into a mental institution.
It's awful.
You couldn't argue with that. You could. I mean, she was doing kooky. You're right. I really can't. I can't. I'm trying to qualify, but I can't. I'm thinking if Slash shaved his head, I don't think he would have been locked up.
He would probably
have lost his kids, but he wouldn't have been locked up. None of those things would have happened to any male rock star.
Not at all. And she tells us why she did that. You know, she says from a very young age, and you know, she's Southern, right? And she talks about that. And she talks about how she always wanted to look pretty and manners and these things that were such a thing for her, which, as they should be. I mean, if that was her thing, it's okay. And she talks about, but yet, you know, it then became a thing where she was always expected to be this and to be that. And it got to the point where she said, you know, I know that everyone always wanted me to be pretty. And that was the quickest way to make me look less pretty, or what people's perception of me was, you know, without my hair and shaving it. And she talks about how all of those things were really done as a form of rebellion against all the things that were expected of her. And, you know, to Christian's point, it's true. I mean, you know, how many men act crazy, all these rock stars, and they're not being, you know, people might say, oh my God, they're losing it, or what's going on with them. Yeah. But they certainly aren't vilified in the way that she was. Yeah.
Where do you start?
Right. Yeah. Right. And so she makes a very good point when she says that. And furthermore, you know, she talks about how, you know, when she finally does go under this conservatorship was just incredible to me. I mean, every aspect of her life was controlled, and I just cannot, even what she ate, so, she tells us.
Yeah, tell people. Do you remember? She ate chicken. Yeah, and chicken, you know what? And
canned vegetables.
That's the part, that detail, the can, that she couldn't, you'd think at least at that level of wealth, she could have had any vegetable from Whole Foods, if that's her punishment. No. Canned vegetables and chicken.
I mean, that sounded chicken.
How long was it? I swear she says 2 years.
Years. It's years that she lives like that. And every aspect of her life, I mean, she's a grown woman. I can't.
She had, you know, when Christian, she goes dating, she, this part was so insanely demoralizing and crazy.
Oh my God.
Were I the suitor of the evening, when I arrived to pick up Brittany, I'm handed a resume of her STDs and sexual partners, and given all of this
her
data,
medical history, yeah. her medical history, the number of her sexual partner, her history, her sexual history. And I'm thinking, how is, crazy. I mean, if there is anything that's more private and more intimate, it's those two things. Yeah. I mean, those are things, your medical history, your sexual history, those are things that you share with only the people that you share
Not at Brittany's house. It's just out on the coffee table. Everybody grabs the coffee.
It's awful. And then every once in a while,
the number increases.
And you know what's awful about that, Christian? I thought about, you know, I've shared, you know, I had a really strict upbringing growing up. You know, there was a lot of rules, and I couldn't wait to get out of the house when I was 18, right? By the time I was 18, I just couldn't wait. And I think of myself, you know, and even then, there's still things about that time. And my life was nowhere near controlled in the manner. I just wasn't allowed to go out as much as I wanted to go out, right? And there's things about even that time that once in a while, I'll still bring up to my parents. I cannot imagine being a grown woman and having had my family and strangers really hired by my family controlling me that way. I mean, how is that okay? It's not. And how are you as an individual okay?
And they're on after vacation going through, half the time while she's locked up in
after
the room.
after going through something like that. So of course you wanted to get this out. Of course you wanted to write this book. And I don't blame her. I'd be pissed. I'd be talking about it every day. I'd be so angry. And the thing that also, you know, really struck me was the fact that, you know, what she says, and which I thought, you know, Brittany, you're absolutely right. She says, you know, here they thought that I was incapable of taking care of myself, incapable of taking care of my children, incapable of all of these things, but yet somehow I was still capable of bringing them millions.
Right, performing each night, hitting my marks.
Yes,
yeah.
Still capable of traveling around the world, giving concerts, doing all of this. That wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
You know, me making money for them was not a problem, but everything else was. I mean, listen, how could you disagree with that? How can you disagree with that?
You can't. No.
There isn't a valid argument against
that. Well, except that to me actually speaks to what I feel like there must have been something. Because what you're saying is so clear and persuasive, I feel like there must be something we don't know, because how could this have occurred for such a long period of time? These judges have seen everything under the sun, and suddenly this one, they're fooled by this crazy family from Louisiana filled with these weirdos and alcoholics, and they're sophisticated enough to get one past a judge with all that money involved. I feel like, because everything you're saying and the way Brittany certainly puts it is totally sensible, logical. You think, how could you can't have it both ways? That's her argument, which is correct. But I feel like, therefore, there must have been something. And I feel like there's something maybe that she's, I mean, it's just her story that she may not be alluding to. I mean, you didn't think it was totally crazy? This woman, you know, we all know that it's at Brittany's level and being who she is, the quantity of paparazzi surrounding this person must be more claustrophobic than you can imagine, right?
Oh.
And yet, who does she date after Kevin Federline? She tells us she starts dating a man. Yeah. When I read that, this is where I thought, there's an element here about you that you're not sharing with us, or you're not being, you can't seem to be cognizant of. You don't quite see how, what a blind spot this is you're revealing about yourself. Like, there's something amiss here.
Right. No, and I totally see what you're saying, because that did, the minute I read that, I thought, Brittany, what are you doing?
Yeah. I felt like she was living her life just letting a chicken run. Like, you know, here's a board with all these different life choices, you know, get up, not get up, be Republican, be Democrat. And it's like a chicken just dropped a kernel of corn on one each day. And she just decided to do that. That's how chaotic her life seemed to me. And it still seems in the book based on the choices that she's making, because they're in opposition to the life she's describing. She goes out of her way to describe this horrible existence, being surrounded by people, and I believe her, and yet she's dating this paparazzi guy, and she casually goes, yeah, I was kooky. It's more than that. It's nutty.
Well,
and we find out he's already married.
Yeah.
She says that she was the mistress to him. How at that level is Britney Spears a mistress to anybody? It's supposed to be, not that it should be, but the other way around. And I've never seen somebody victimized. So every moment of the day after, I don't feel like Justin Timberlake victimized her. He just seemed like a dick. But after that, you feel like she's just fleeced over and over and over. And people are just taking from her. And she comes across as this very trusting person. I'm really sweet. And everyone just walks all over her. But I feel like there's got to be something more to it than that. And I think that I would have liked to have seen or heard somebody chime in with a story or two or something. That was my misgiving about the book. Like, I think there's something.
I can understand that. I can understand that, because there are moments where it is, you know, there's question marks, right? In terms of
Great way of putting it.
Yeah, like how did this happen? And the other thing too is, you know, the biggest thing for me was, I forget who it was. She was dating someone who then became her conservator as well. And I thought to myself,
how does that happen?
How does that happen? Yeah. How does a boyfriend become your conservator? I mean, I could understand if you're married and you become ill, and then, but then even then, that wouldn't be a concern. That would be your power of attorney, possibly, or something. I don't know. It was just, there were, and yes, Christian, I do agree with you on this in terms of, there were parts of the book in moments like this, when she talks, like for instance, with this paparazzi guy, right? And this other boyfriend who becomes a co-conservator along with her dad.
Yeah.
I mean, that would raise red flags for me. Any boyfriend wanting to be my conservator, I'd be like, what are you doing? And why are you talking to my dad? And what the hell's going on? But, but you know, by the same token, and so I do think that maybe there was something there that we weren't let into.
Martha, however, how can a human being have the unfailing ability to select all of these human beings, all of whom, when given the chance, take as much as they can in the most egregious television soap opera way?
Well, Christian, I will also say with that, I mean, there's the other side of it, right? I mean, sometimes people don't necessarily make the best choices. They make good choice about other things in their life, but maybe not so much partners. And I think in her case, that's it. I think that that is part of it. But I also think that one of the things that she does, I was going to say she alludes to, but she doesn't allude to it. She says it, is that she always wanted to be the nice girl. She always wanted to do what was right. She talks, and this led me back to, you know, whenever I read these books, I always try to get into the head of the person telling us a story and try and make sense of things whenever they don't necessarily tell us, because I want to kind of put the pieces together and try find some logic, right? And so what she does tell us at the beginning of the book is that her dad was an alcoholic, and she made it very difficult for both she and her brother, especially her brother, to really measure up to the expectations that her dad had of them, in part because her grandfather was very, very tough on her dad. And so her dad always had to sort of, you know, not fight for his affection, but prove himself in the things that he did. She tells us that his dad, like her, played a basketball, and her grandfather would make him practice and practice and practice because he had to be perfect. And her dad felt that the only way that her grandfather would love him was if he was perfect. In the very same way in which she tells us that the only way that both she and her older brother felt that they could gain any bit of their dad's affection or approval was by being the best they could be and trying to constantly prove themselves and winning that affection. And, you know, just as a couch psychologist or whatever you call it, I feel that for her, that was the thing. You know, people repeat patterns that they see in their home. You know, the way that you grow up in your home, a lot of the time, unfortunately, those are patterns that you take out into the world and you repeat with other people and their relationships with other people, be it romantic or friendships. And to me, it sounded like the men that she picked over and over again were constantly men that she felt she needed to some degree to please in order for them to stay with her. And I think in part it was going back to the way that she was brought up, you know, and I think that that was the pattern that I saw with all the men in her life would take stuff from her, whatever that was. Like Justin, going back to Justin, you know, he took that breakup and all that love that she felt for him and then used it against her to catapult himself with that album. Kevin Federline, you know, he saw that she was weak and vulnerable, and he went into that. And then he used that to try and kick off this rapper career that never came to be anything. You know, so it's almost like the men that were with her were trying to always take something from her. And I think she just went along with it for the sake of having that companionship. I truly felt that. So I think that maybe that's that missing link that we never necessarily got of why she chose these men and why, you know, because I think that they knew how to manipulate her too. Not saying that she's completely innocent. I mean, she's a grown woman, right? But I do think
that. How
do
these men know? I mean, now you're getting into deep psychology in the subconscious and all that stuff. But how does a man at that age of 20, whatever, have the cunning to see somebody vulnerable, to see somebody from whom he can take all? How do these two people find one another so perfectly all the time?
I think that sometimes people that have, I think that sometimes, you know.
I know, I've heard that people do. They keep finding
the people. Yeah, they do. I really do believe that.
I think I've got a shot with Brittany, guaranteed. I would double her allowance. I just want everybody to know that.
Stop.
I would double it.
Stop.
I would let her drink on the weekends, but she's got to stay fit during the week for those Vegas shows.
Oh my goodness. And she talks about that, her dad, you know, telling her, you look fat.
Yeah.
You look fat. You don't look right. You don't look well. You don't look right. You need to look better.
There's a great
moment. Oh my gosh.
When she's keeping all the receipts and stuff.
Oh yes.
And she doesn't realize that the net's closing in around her and that things aren't going so great in terms of this, the planning of the conservatorship around her. And mm-hmm. She's talking to her dad, and the dad's giving her orders and telling her how it's going to be. And he says, it's a great line out of a movie. He says, I'm Britney Spears now. Oh, I
yes!
love that.
I love it. What a dick.
Yeah, I've taken control. You know what it was like? You ever see such a great movie called The Founder?
No.
It's the guy who he discovers Ray Kroc. Okay. But he stumbles across McDonald's. And what he does to basically steal from them their identity, their persona, their everything, he takes from them. And by the end, he becomes them. I am you now. I own you now. I own your likeness. I am you. And so when the father says, I am Britney Spears now, I am this corporation of you, and I have the paperwork, I have this, I have that, and you're just one part of it all now. And you do what I tell you to do. I love that moment. I'm Britney Spears.
It was very dark.
I'm going to do that to you one day, Martha. When you least expect it.
I'm
the rock star autobiography podcast now. You will stop eating between Monday through Friday. You will drink only water and be hydrated when we record. And then you will sleep in a dark room. I will give you chicken goodness. And canned vegetables
That's all
on
you
Christmas
can eat.
And a picture of Nick if I'm in the mood. Good night, Clank. I won't see you coming.
I'm not Brittany. I'm not
I'm
that
Martha,
nice.
Bitch. I'm going to try this conservative move on somebody. It seems like it's doable.
But you know what, Christian? Here is the thing that in spite of all of this, she was still making music that was songs that were turning out to be hits.
Well,
like Give Me More. You know, she was still doing all
I
of
know
that.
You,
and so you've got to hand it to
I
her.
Know you hate it when I do this, but this is why to me this is like the shallowest book we've read so far. To her why? Credit, it sounds like she's not somebody who's a diva in the studio. She shows up. You get the sense she does it in a couple takes and that's it. She just,
yes,
I'm done.
Yes.
And which is great. But in that regard, she really does seem like a workhorse stallion that people, you know, we just need you to do that job and then perform and then just go away. We'll do the rest. And she can do that part. But, you know, when you say she's recording all these hits, you know, I know you're, I'm going to say it again. I don't care.
I know.
Because
she didn't
I
write
the conservatorship
a lot of those songs
over the show. She didn't write any of them. She just shows up.
No, she's written some songs, but she has not.
Really, she's written those songs like she wrote this book. She didn't write any of this stuff.
Well, she's written some songs, but
you mean some lyrics,
maybe. Well, yeah, some lyrics. She has written some of her some some lyrics.
I tell you,
some
if songs. The lyrics, but, if this book is an indication of the lyrics, they're terrible.
But she has not. She did not write, you know, some of the bigger hits.
Oh, really?
She didn't write those. Like,
no.
But I will say, you know, Christian, having to rehearse, having to do all that, that's work.
No one's
that
saying it's not. Work. So it's going to any job. I mean,
but she was showing up for that. But my point being that in spite of all of this, in spite of everything that was going on, she was still showing up. She was still doing it.
Yeah. But you
and you've got to hand it to her that, because let me tell you, there are days where I haven't even gone through half of what Britney has gone, and it takes a lot for me
don't
to muster
I'm
the
listening.
Energy.
I'm gonna lock you up.
It takes a lot to muster the energy. So I can only imagine, besides the physical, the mental exhaustion that this poor woman felt. It's awful. It's awful. So I want to say this about Baby One More Time. There is an excellent cover of that song by the band Travis. I highly, highly recommend everyone go listen to it after this episode, and you will find that song to be one of the sexiest songs you've ever heard.
And for our listeners, Travis is not the name of one of Britney's ex-boyfriends. It's the name.
It is not. It's the name of a band.
Travis.
And who I met, by the way. Oh. Very nice guys. Very, very sweet guys. Mm. Yes, they're very sweet. I love them. If any of the Travis band members are listening, hi.
I'm going to lock you up. I need you to cool it with the weirdness. I want to say that Britney's, it sounded so unfun for a while that she, I guess her big transgression is she's got over-the-counter energy pill or something.
Oh,
that's all it
it's
takes.
Like,
they lock her up. Yes, I think it's in an actual, she's sent to rehab instantly. No choice.
Yes.
She's just stuck there, paying it out of her own pocket. Thousands and thousands of dollars. And she says that other people, I forget whom, they have to go to meetings once or twice a month or week, but she's stuck going every day.
Yes.
Can you imagine the quantity stories at Al-Anon and all the places poor Britney is? She's just had this weirdest life. But you know what? Nothing's changed.
It's so sad to me.
I would think what was sad about the book is this book didn't feel like she'd turned a corner. Like, here's the book. I'm breaking free. Let me tell the story and then free myself of it. Because the guy that whose virtues she's extolling at the end, they're already divorced. I don't know if you know that.
I know.
They were.
Hello. Of course, I know.
I feel stupid
everything.
For saying that. Yeah. Yeah. They were even married a year. They're just.
I know,
it's Splitsville. That's
it's
why,
so
Brittany,
sad.
If you're listening, I will hold you. I will hold you so long. I will hold you for days. I won't take your empire. I just want a house or two. I would be upfront. Just give me a house or two now. I mean, you know, I'm never coming after
so
you for anything
mean.
Else. I'm not. I'd be supportive, you know. I wouldn't tell her she was fat. I'd say, what you want, baby? Let's get fat together. You know, I've never gotten a bigger sense of a homebody ever than Britney. You really get a sense she doesn't want to leave the house.
COVID
seemed like a dream come true for her. She just
watching
Netflix, eating junk food all day long.
She talks about that, you know, she talks about how she just really enjoys it. It seemed to me that she was way over her head with fame.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
That it was just something that wasn't
a comfortable
for
mantle for her to carry.
No,
yeah.
It wasn't. And she tells us that. Yeah. She says, you know, I enjoy recording. I enjoy all of that. I don't enjoy necessarily, you know, having to be out there all the time.
I won't make her.
Yeah. So I know it was very sad. I am rooting for Britney.
I really
wish her the best.
I really want the best for her.
Britney, if you're listening,
don't you dare. Don't torpedo my attempts or my hopes.
And Christian is a lawyer, so he would make sure that you don't fall under any other conservatorship ever.
I would just make sure mine was airtight. You can't get out of this one. No way.
You're awful. That's terrible.
Negative.
That's terrible.
Yeah. What's that song Brittany. About not being my slave that she wrote or that she sings? What's it called?
Oh, I'm a slave for you.
I say you sure are. That's Brittany. The name of my conservative ship filing. For
that
you.
Is sign it right my here. Favorite Britney song. It is
yeah.
a great. I love that song. I really genuinely love that song. Written by Pharrell. It's a great song.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's a great song.
You want to say about Britney Spears?
No, I think we covered as much as this book allowed us to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it really wasn't that much about the music as much as it really was about. But you know, she tells us, I do want to share that she has won a lot of awards, which she does share with us. And you know, I mean, look, there was a time when Britney was everywhere. She really was. And it's very sad that things have turned out the way they have for her. And hopefully she will be well soon. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say that we both wish Britney well.
Yes,
Christian.
I do. She seemed fine. You know,
she does. She really does seem like a nice person, and she's been through so much.
I don't judge her. That's all. That's all I meant. I don't know. She seems super nice. She left a lot out. She could casually say once in a while to this person, I'm sorry. I was really awful. I was horrible. I was this. And that's the extent of the anecdote is that sentence. And I want to know from those people, what was it like dealing with Britney? I think that sounded no fun.
Well, I'm sure that it wasn't easy, and she even tells us at some points. I mean, there's a few moments in the book where she says, "I wasn't always the easiest person to be around. There were moments when I was mean, and I'm sure that there were moments when she was mean and not pleasant, and all of those things, And that doesn't take away the fact that overall she does seem like a nice person. I mean, we've all been jerks at one point or another.
Correct.
I'm sure that, you know, some people will, you know, everyone's experience with us is different, right? With some people might say, oh my God, no, she's wonderful. She's this. Or, oh, he's wonderful. And others may say, not quite. And so it's all up to what that experience is. And so the way she comes across overall to me seems like she's a nice person who has had, I'm sure, bad moments just like the rest of us. And unfortunately, hers have been caught on camera, many of them, or at least some of her worst moments have. And that's a shame, you know?
Yeah, it is. I want you to know for Christmas this year, Martha, I'm going to get you hair clippers.
Oh?
Yeah. I want to catch you when you shave your hair and go bananas. I'm going to...
Oh my goodness. Well, let me tell you, there are moments where I feel like I will.
Yeah, but. I'm sure you will. I'm going to be there. Britney, you know, she's missing an opportunity. She should release like Britney Spears shave your head clippers. I bet people buy that. If they buy that crazy, I'm serious.
Stop.
If they buy, I don't know. Why not? She could own that in a second. What I'm saying is take control of that. She already has. It's in the past. I'd forgotten about it. That's how quickly everybody moves on. But if I'm blanking on her name, the famous, she has Goop, you know, the actress Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, brother.
If she can sell that nonsense and put a $500 label on it, I think Britney Spears, I mean, I didn't even mean that meanly. Why not just own it?
Saying.
Own it. Make money off it. Say, And she can make it pink and put some stuff on it and say, own your power or whatever. Add some nonsense to it. She could make a fortune.
You're right. You're right. I mean, if Gwyneth Paltrow is selling what, like,
stuff,
whatever nonsense she sells, anyone else can do it, clearly.
Yeah, no doubt.
But we wish you well, Brittany.
I wish you well, Brittany.
We do.
Yeah. I hope you're listening.
I hope you're listening because I really do like some of your music.
Okay.
I like Toxic. Give Me More. I think it's such a great song. She has some good stuff.
She's listening.
She's listening
to us.
She's
at home on her bed alone.
Oh, no. I hope
she
finds
How do we get a copy of that letter? That Justin Timberlake letter.
You know, it would have been great if she would have printed that letter. Man,
she should have.
She really should have.
I really felt that destroyed that guy.
I feel she should have printed that letter. That would have been amazing to read. And, you know, she does tell us, I want to say one thing before we end too. She tells us that the first time they kiss, they're playing a game of truth or dare. And and Janet Jackson is playing in the background, right? And I thought, wow, what a moment. Because later, you know, he also sort of benefited from that moment during the Super Bowl with Janet Jackson.
Okay.
It all ties together. But then I wondered, I wonder what song that was. I wonder if it was Let's Wait a While by Janet Jackson. I wish you would have told us what song it was. That would have been perfect for that.
Yeah.
First kiss.
She has to keep some secrets.
Well, some. Mm-hmm. Yes. She couldn't share that.
No. She should have. All right.
She should have.
That's it. We have no idea what we're reading next, but you can rest assured that there's a book out there and we are about to climb it. Digest it.
I want to read something that I know you're not going to want to read, but
is it Britney Spears?
We can talk about it later.
Sequel? Is it her second book?
Honey, if she comes out with another book, we're reading it. We are reading all the Britney books. All of them.
I read it.
All of them. All of them.
Alrighty. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next.